gee, it's 9 o'clock, maybe even a minute or two beyond. And that's what happens when Stan has an old friend stop by. Oh, my.
You're in trouble now.
Yes, that's right. It's it's the D twins. Demetria, wave, Demetria.
Hello.
And Dixie. Dixie Mullenkoff and Demetria Mathis over in the College of Veterinary Medicine. And you guys really lucked out, because last year you got drafted as an emergency backup specialist.
That's right. Exactly.
And you did such a wonderful job, we told the other guy to stay put. We wanted you back here. So anyway, Demetria and Dixie, we wanted to talk a little bit about antimicrobial use and resistance, the old antibiotic resistance thing that everybody is talking about, mostly with regard to humans, but the critters come into the mix because half the folks think it's the critters that are giving the humans the resistance problems, and it's really the same issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, where are we going to start here? We got to use these things anyway. I work with consumers a lot, okay? And they say, hey, get those antibiotic crap out of my meat, out of my milk, out of everything else. You shouldn't be using it on the farm.
Well, if they become ill and, you know, they have a bacterial infection, wouldn't they want an antibiotic? Wouldn't a consumer want to be treated if they were sick? It's kind of the same thing with livestock.
I would tend to agree with you, but some of them don't. And, you know, some of them want an antibiotic regardless of whether it's a microbial, right?
Yeah. Exactly. I'm sick. Give me a pill.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, you make your good point, but we seem to be using an awful lot of it out there. We're just shoving it willy-nilly into these pigs.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I think it comes down to the way we use antimicrobials and antibiotics. If we use it to treat sick animals, I think that's an appropriate use of antibiotics on the farm and in livestock. When we start to use it potentially for like growth promotion or production regions, that's when we kind of get into a little bit of a gray area, and you know, maybe that's not the best use of antibiotics, especially the critically important ones, the ones that are used in human medicine or to use to treat sick animals. Those shouldn't really be used kind of routinely on the farm. They should only be used to treat a sick animal.
Well, and I guess some of the arguments that I hear really go back to a previous era where we did do a lot more subtherapeutic type use of antibiotics for either growth promotion or for prevention, quote-unquote. Mm. That's not a regular practice in most situations anymore, correct?
No, and we're very much moving away from that. The FDA has now brought down some guidances as far as, you know, what is judicious use of antimicrobials in food production. And growth promotant is definitely not a judicious use. So we're not doing that anymore. Actually, starting the beginning of next month is when everything
October
really
1st.
Actually kicks in.
We're gonna talk about that in a little bit later. But one of the things I wanted to maybe start here, and that is, you know, the concern is often about the development of antibiotic resistance. Give me the nickel lesson on how that happens. You know, what it is about antibiotics that we can build a resistance, or just not the heavy science,
right.
But how it happens. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can.
Sure. Yeah, so whenever we use an antibiotic, they're going to kill bacteria. Now, if some of those bacteria have a mutation that they become resistant to the bacteria, resistant to the antibiotic, so the antibiotics don't kill that bacteria. When we use antibiotics, we kill off all the bacteria that are susceptible. But the ones that are left happen to be the ones that are able to survive even in the presence of those antibiotics. And so those become resistant. And so that's what we mean by antibiotic resistance.
And those then take over.
Correct. Then they multiply, they replicate, and then you have a large population of those bacteria, and they're resistant to that antibiotic. They survive even in the presence of it.
So what are your basic treatments with the critters to make sure that doesn't happen? What are the recommendations we're using today?
Sure. The recommendations are to use them judiciously, like Dixie said. Also, to use the appropriate dosage, the appropriate length of treatment. All those things are very important to make sure that we don't get those resistant bacteria. And then if we have resistant bacteria, to recognize it and then treat with an antibiotic that's appropriate.
I think one of the things is, you know, having a good communication with your veterinarian.
Yeah.
I mean, that's you know, going to be very key. Mm-hmm.
So we think about this often in terms of human health. And, you know, often the public arguments that get discussed out there, and we're not going to go there because we all have our way of addressing those. But, you know, often those arguments kind of fudge over what the real connection is between. I mean, why should we be worried about antibiotic resistance in critters transferring over to humans?
Sure.
You want to answer it?
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, eeny, meeny, miny, moe. What? We're all mammals. I mean, a lot of these bacteria don't really care what species they're in. So, you know, we know in food animals, if we have resistant bacteria, they can make their way into the food chain, and then they can colonize humans, which, you know, most people probably do carry around some resistant bacteria in their flora, you know.
We talked about that yesterday with
absolutely.
Armando. I mean, he wanted to go out and start scratching people to see what might be colonized out there in the audience.
You know, we take a lot of swabs, and I don't think these people want us to do that. I'm just saying.
Jeff back there is an expert on nose swabs. That was what I was recommending.
Well, we swab the other end.
We're not going to go there.
You don't want to go there.
See what happens when you're the first ones in the audience today.
It's all downhill today.
So anyway, there is that chance of those things crossing
through. Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
And vice versa, too. I mean, we know that these resistant bacteria, they're in people, like human hospital settings. They leave there. They go to, you know, they can be found in water, and they circulate around the entire planet, really.
Well, and we know from particularly the hog and chicken industry, and hogs especially, we don't let a lot of strangers.
No.
Or a worker who comes down with a cold or whatever does not get in that confinement house because it can go straight through.
No way.
You know, swine flu is bad, but people flu is even worse for the swine. So, hey, let's explain to me a little bit. We've got this thing. We've got a new set of guidelines from FDA, and this gets back to what I guess Dixie was saying about judicious use.
Hard to say, isn't it?
Judicious use. And it's only Wednesday morning, not Thursday. Judicious use. Explain to me what these guidelines are to begin with. Well, we know why they came about because of all this discussion that we're having. But what are the guidelines that are kicking off this week, next week?
October 1st.
October 1st. Yeah, that's soon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the FDA kind of produces these guidelines, and they're just to kind of instruct producers, veterinarians, and how to appropriately use antibiotics to best handle the situation. And so most of them are targeted toward the clinically important antimicrobials. So antibiotics that are used to treat infections. So when we go to the hospital, those antibiotics that we might potentially get, and antibiotics that are dogs, cats, livestock, what they might get to treat an infection.
Such as?
You know, tetracycline, sulfas, cephalosporin.
Cephalosporin, ceftiofur, those kinds of things.
Stuff that we all recognize at some
names
point.
We recognize.
Right. Yeah. And they have, also, the FDA has a list of all of those.
I'm sure it's very long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so really what they recommend is to only use those to treat a sick animal, to not use those to kind of treat. And if you want to use them to control or prevent, to really do that under the guidance of a veterinarian. So to make sure that you're using the right antibiotic appropriately and that you're getting the most bang for the antibiotic that you're using and you're using it safely. So those are the main guidelines that the FDA proposes. Also, they propose that they want a voluntary for the companies that produce the antibiotics to adjust their labels appropriately.
Okay.
So that they're used for treatment of sick animals and also that they're used under a veterinarian's recommendation and guidance.
Okay, so we've got a set of guidelines here, and it sounds to me, and it should have been this way before, but I mean, it sounds to me like a lot of the emphasis has to go on managing this use with your vets.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. One of the questions I would have, you know, having worked with some of the critter industries in the past, you know, one of the questions I would have is, what are we doing to train our vets to maybe do a little bit of a better job, particularly those who have lived through the subtherapeutic era?
Right.
And, you know, they're all, you know, ones I've run into anyway are willing to change, but that's a difference. And they've got clients who, you know, have done it that way and it worked for them, so they're not thinking about the antibiotic resistance issue as much, maybe. What are we doing to make sure that our vets learn how to handle that?
And I think, I mean, the FDA, when they put together this kind of three-prong approach to maintaining, you know, the efficacy of antibiotics, they were thinking about that. And so kind of the third component is a veterinary feed directive. And it's basically geared at, you know, there's some education components to it for veterinarians. You know, how do you present this to your client who's used to, you know, I've been using this for growth promotant for years, and, you know, we have to change. We need to change, and there's a lot of things. And I know FDA realizes that maybe veterinary coverage is not what it should be in some areas.
Absolutely.
And they're addressing that. They're working to make sure that, you know, everybody involved in livestock production has access to these antimicrobials through a veterinarian.
So. Yeah, I have to wonder if they've chosen to maybe do a little bit more education with the feed mills.
Exactly,
yes,
that too.
Right. Yes, they have.
That's, a lot of that stuff goes in through there.
Right.
That's good.
Yeah,
they have to make up
these medicated feeds if they need to, if there is an issue that exists.
Right.
I mean, they have some extra training and things that now too.
Also, the AVMA, the American Veterinary Medical Association, is working with the FDA to kind of train the veterinarians, and they're taking a pretty active role in helping to support these guidelines and to get the word out and education to the veterinarians.
Oh, we would certainly hope so, considering this is one of those issues that can bite veterinarians as hard as it might bite the producers, because we do have a lot of disconnect in the minds of the people who ultimately pay our paychecks.
Mm-hmm. We do.
There's consumers. Hey, let's take a brief break and see if there are any questions from these folks that braved the morning harassment session. Come on, Chris, wake up back there. Where's the question, buddy? See, this is what happens when the guy up front happens to know you. He's used to it. All right. Well, I'm not hearing any questions. So what other pieces about this building or this buildup of concern and the buildup of antibiotic resistance haven't we hit on that we needed to? You guys are the smart ones. Come on.
Sure. I think the link between veterinary medicine and livestock production and human medicine is important. I think more and more our research is showing how important those three populations are, and how much these antibiotic resistant bacteria are kind of floating from population to population. And I think the more we know about that, the more we realize how important this issue is, and that we need to do something about it.
Well, and I know we've got some programs in Vet Med at OSU, as well as the med school tied in, the human med school.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess what I don't know, and maybe you guys aren't the right ones, but is that link as strong as it needs to be, not just at OSU, but elsewhere?
It's improving. I mean, and we're kind of taking the, I'm sure most of you have heard the term, the one medicine approach.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, people, animals, environment. That's becoming a very keen idea, and a lot of people, there's a lot of more collaboration than ever going on with that. Actually, we were just in a meeting about this topic yesterday.
Okay.
To make those links between livestock, veterinary medicine, and human medicine, to make those connections, make sure we're talking to each other, we recognize where the problems are and how to work together to solve it. And I think that's essential to solve it.
Well, I know in some of my dealings with the med school, there seems to be a recognition that veterinary medicine also exists, which we
they've heard of it.
Yeah, we hadn't heard that in the past. Actually, I had a doc the other week agree that maybe I should see a large animal veterinarian. You know, large animal, and he couldn't figure it out, so send him somebody that could diagnose patients that can't talk. So anyway, with that, I think we have just about run out of the abuse for this session. I need to get myself wound up, so when the D-twins here, as I'm calling them this morning.
I don't know.
Some nicknames, so I'm all right.
Yeah, there could be worse nicknames I could come up with. Anyway, Demetria and Dixie will be back a little later this afternoon. You notice how we spread that out so you guys are stuck here all day?
That's okay.
I know
we're
excited. I know. That's why we did it, right, Jeff? Anyway, so we're going to take just a brief break, and then I guess I'm waiting for Mo's stuck in traffic. He's a rookie up here, isn't he? He hasn't had to learn his lesson about traffic at this time of day. We'll forgive him for a minute. Okay. You two want to talk about poultry health? No, let's not do that.
He's the expert in that field.
I'm absolutely certain he is.
Okay. Well, then we'll just take a break here. I guess I should point out that we do have the College of Veterinary Medicine right over here. I am told that they need you two over there because there's a disease running rampant through that tent.
Oh.
And the more help they have from the college to help, you know, contain it, or actually, they don't want to contain it. I was a little shocked. They don't want to contain this disease. They want it to spread, but they need to control the spreading process. I don't, it must be some biotech thing you guys have dreamed up, but you can get buckeye fever in that tent.
This is the season for it, too.
Well, you know, and I heard you can even win valuable prizes if it spreads in the right direction.
Well, that sounds
wonderful.
Is
that true, Jeff? Valuable prizes. Boy, better than a bumper sticker. That's what they told me anyway. All right, so I will send folks over there, and really any of the vet med topics, certainly people have. I've heard rumors of a liver diagnosis to occur today. I'm thinking about having it happen right up here in front, but, you know, that's probably not a good idea. So anyway, you know, I don't know. We don't have any live critters over there to be born, do we? No. Jeff is shaking his head. He's really worried now because he knows that we have a little time to kill since Mo's stuck in traffic. And he's never quite sure after Stan's been out here a few days what might come out. So with that, I think we'd better shut up because, look, Chris is abandoning me already. He's a smart man. Okay. Mm-hmm. We'll take a break. Thanks, Demetria. Thanks, Dixie.
You're welcome.
And
thank
we'll
you,
see
Stan.
You at 2 o'clock.